Hello, and welcome to the Women's Hour. I'm Kelly Pyle, your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster. Today's show features articles from both the August 1st and August 8th editions of People, the July issue of Women's Health, and Oprah Daily. A few of the articles I will share today include Heidi Klum will have what she's having, Farewell to a TV Goddess, and How Jen Chills Out. Heidi Klum will have what she's having. The supermodel, who returns to Project Runway July 31st, is living her best and sexiest life at 52. Don't hide in your 50s. We only have this one life, so keep living it. By Brittany Tallarico, photographs by Max Montgomery. This is a People magazine exclusive. Heidi Klum steps outside onto the poolside set of her People cover shoot, and as if on command, the June gloom clouds part to reveal brilliant blue skies. She stops to smell a bunch of jasmine before climbing on top of the diving board. With her sequin mini dress sparkling in the sunlight, Klum, 52, tosses her hair back and flashes the smile and legs that made her famous. People always say, "You probably got more confidence as you've gotten older." "But I have always been confident," Klum says. "I have no problem walking around in my underwear. I'm not hiding in a corner." If anything, Klum is living louder and bolder than ever in her 50s. Whether she's making out with her husband on the red carpet or running around sexy, the supermodel, who was once told she smiled too much for the runway, is unapologetically happy. "I didn't think I was going to be where I am today, with a gorgeous husband, 4 kids, and traveling the world. I could not dream of anything like that. So yes, I'm very happy." Born in Bergisich Gladbach, Germany, in 1973, Klum was a competitive dancer who loved being in front of people. She began modeling at 19 after winning a contest in Germany. "At the time, extra thin was the look to have, and I have the opposite. I had boobs and hips, and I couldn't fit into the clothes." As a result, she was relegated to cheesier catalog stuff until 1998, when her curves landed her the cover of the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue. "That changed everything," she recalls. "Wherever I went, people would be like, 'That's the girl from Sports Illustrated.'" Then she struck supermodel gold in the form of a thong and a pair of wings. "It did a lot for my career," she says, of her 13-year partnership with Victoria's Secret, which included walking in the lingerie brand's famed fashion shows and earning an angel title. In 2004, Klum traded the catwalk for cable as the host of Project Runway. After 16 seasons and an Emmy for her work on the show, she went on to appear on Making the Cut, Germany's Next Top Model, and America's Got Talent. "I'm a workaholic control freak," she admits, of her more than 2 decades hosting, judging, and producing TV shows, in addition to her several entrepreneurial endeavors. "I just love what I do." She will be bringing that passion to prime time once again with the new, revamped 21st season of Project Runway, which features familiar faces Nina Garcia and Christian Siriano, and a new judge, image architect La Roach. Klum says the experience feels like a true homecoming and validation that people still care about the craftsmanship behind clothes. My fashion heart still goes crazy when I see something fabulous, when I see an amazing dress, when someone does something new. I'm like, how did you come up with that? I'm still amazed at people and their talents. While she was building her resume, she was also raising 4 children. Daughter Lenny, 21, from a past relationship with Italian businessman Flavio Briatore, and sons Henry, 19, and Johan, 18, and daughter Lou, 15, from her previous marriage to the musician Seal. You definitely go to the back of the line, Klum says, of becoming a mom. When you have 4 kids, everyone always needs something, so you have to take care of everybody. Klum's parenting was questioned in 2023 when she appeared alongside Lenny in a lingerie campaign for Intimissimi, receiving backlash for the racy ad. A lot of people are like, oh, I don't know about mom and daughter doing this together, she says. But for us, I'm proud of my daughter. She's fine with me like that. She shrugs off the controversy. I've always been very open with my body. When I'm suntanning in the backyard, I might not have my top on. I'm European. My kids don't know me any other way and are probably more easygoing with their bodies because of it. Top or no top, she's still a typical mom who stresses about her kids. When they're young, you're worried they're going to jump in the pool or stick their finger in a socket, she says. Then they're driving. Then it's sex, drugs, and rock and roll. You hope the seed you planted in them grows, that they're good people, that they're healthy. But you always worry. And I know I'll still be worrying when I'm 80. Now that her children are older, Klum and her husband, German musician Tom Kaulitz, have the house mostly to themselves. Twice divorced, Klum says she was not looking for a third husband. She almost didn't go out the night she met Kaulitz at a party 7 years ago in what she calls a sliding door moment. The couple got engaged in December 2018 and married 2 months later. The Tokyo Hotel founder and guitarist, 35, represented a clean slate for Klum, who first married celebrity hairstylist Rick Pepino in 1997, before a 7-year marriage to Seal, which ended when they separated in 2012. At first, I wanted to project what I had learned from different men I had been with. Like, oh, this reminds me of something that happened. Is that a flag? She says of her baggage from past relationships. But Tom said, don't do this to me. Because I'm not this person. I'm not that person. Scratch everything. I have to have a fair chance. What hasn't been challenging for Klum is the couple's 17-year-old age gap. When our door closes at home and when we're good, I don't really care so much about what happens around us, she says. I've learned things from my husband that I didn't know I was capable of doing. Klum, who says she keeps her marriage spicy by exchanging love notes, going lingerie shopping together, and even tattooing each other, plus some other things she says she can't share, is embracing this stage of life and talking about it with zero filter. The biggest misconception about your 50s is that you're off the shelf, she says. We are very much on that shelf for everyone to see. Beauty is ever changing, and I'm here for the change. If it's always the same, life is boring. Even so, she's open to cosmetic enhancements. I'm all for Botox, she says, and is inspired by the recent wave of celebrities revealing their procedures. Whoever wants to talk about plastic surgery and wants to share, give me all the numbers. One aging milestone she hasn't hit yet is gray hair, and at least not on her head. I have one in my eyebrow. It's so weird. And I have one on this boob that is this long sometimes, she reveals. When gray hair eventually strikes, Klum will welcome it and whatever else comes her way. Don't we all want to get old? I know we always say that, but it's the truth. I'm already looking at 60 and 70, hopefully 80 and 90, and if we're still kicking it then, let's celebrate. This has been a People Magazine exclusive. Heidi Klum will have what she's having. Lonnie Anderson, 1945 to 2025. Farewell to a TV goddess. Sharply funny as an anything but dumb blonde on WKRP in Cincinnati, she survived a brutal breakup with Burt Reynolds and lived to remember the good times, by Tom Gliotto from People. With her solid platinum hair and curved physique, Lonnie Anderson didn't object to being considered a sex symbol. I embrace it, she said in 2021. But playing dumb blondes, that she could do without. Auditioning for the sitcom role of WKRP in Cincinnati's Jennifer Marlowe, a receptionist at a mismanaged radio station, she made it clear that she thought the character was Vacus. As she recalled in a 2020 interview, I went in and sat on my little soapbox and said, I don't want to play this part because she's just here to deliver messages and is window dressing. Creator Hugh Wilson had an idea. Let's make her look like Lana Turner and be the smartest person in the room. She wisely accepted and stayed sensitive to blonde jokes. WKRP, which aired on CBS from 1978 to 1982, made Anderson a star, earning her 2 Emmy nominations and establishing her as a savvy TV goddess, a kind of forerunner to Christina Hendricks Joan on Mad Men. The show also gave her the clout to be paired with superstar Burt Reynolds, first in the 1983 movie Stoker Ace, and then in real life. He swept her into a storybook romance and then dragged her through one of Hollywood's most memorably vicious breakups, what the Los Angeles Times called the ugly divorce that just wouldn't end. Anderson died in Los Angeles of an undisclosed illness on August 3rd, 2 days shy of her 80th birthday. She survived by her 4th husband, Bob Flick, a musician, as well as a daughter, Deidre, 60, from her first marriage, and son, Quentin, 36, from her marriage to third husband, Reynolds. She was a real talent with a glowing sense of humor, wrote her friend, I Dream of Jeannie star Barbara Eden, one in a trillion. In addition to a buzzy role as Jane Mansfield in a 1980 TV movie that co-starred Arnold Schwarzenegger, Anderson's WKRP years were probably the high point of her career. She would end up spending decades dealing with the fallout of her toxic relationship with Reynolds, who died in 2018. They began dating in 1982, and 5 years after filming Stroker Ace, married at his ranch in Jupiter, Florida, where guests included Anne Margaret, Jim Nabors, he sang Love Is Here to Stay, and Robbie Benson, who said the newlyweds looked like the perfect couple, the kind you see on the top of a wedding cake, only bigger. That same year, they adopted an infant son, Quentin. But at some point, the honeymoon faded and died. Reynolds, who blindsided Anderson with divorce papers in 1993, accused her of being a shopaholic. She bought everything in triplicate, from everyday dresses to jewelry to china and linens. And of forcing him to go almost 3 years without love in the biblical sense. But Anderson responded in 1995 with a best-selling memoir, My Life in High Heels. I waited until I was no longer angry, bitter, hurt, or anguished, she told People. She had kept plenty of ammo in reserve, though. Reynolds, she claimed, had been physically abusive, addicted to painkillers, and reluctant to fork over child support. Reynolds didn't pay off the divorce settlement until 2015. The St. Paul native, who married fourth husband Flick in 2008, once said that she didn't regret her sometimes turbulent romantic history. My husbands have all brought lovely things to my life. In 2021, accompanied by Quentin, she even unveiled a memorial bust of Reynolds at his grave, saying, I just want to remember the good times, with reporting by Stephanie Wanger. The bad and the beautiful. Life with Reynolds was harrowing, she said. He once offered to hand her a gun so she could kill herself. But she was grateful for their son. If I hadn't married Bert, I wouldn't have Quentin, she told People. This has been Farewell to a TV Goddess from People magazine. How Jen Chills Out. As the Lola V Hair Care founder enters her fifth year in business, Jennifer Aniston shares What Life is Like After Hours by Jackie Fields from People magazine. When your hair has been a topic of conversation for 3 decades, creating a hair care brand seems like kismet. Jennifer Aniston, whose colors, cuts, and styles have inspired generations of fans, launched Lola V in 2021 after searching for products that were good for the environment and for her temperamental hair. It was always kind of my trouble spot, she says, because it's so inconsistently curly and is very frizz prone. The morning show star and producer, 56, says being a beauty entrepreneur is a lot of hard work, but I love it. Here's how the self-described Busy Bee, who just launched Lola V's 12th product, winds down. Hint, it involves an epic playlist. When you launched L'Eau-La-Vie with Glossing Detangler, you called it the Swiss Army knife of products. How would you describe your new dry shampoo? Well, there's a little Swiss Army knife in this one too. We wanted it to be a product that did more than just mask oil. It gives the roots a little lift. I used it on a photo shoot a couple of weeks ago, and Chris McMillan, Aniston's longtime hairstylist, was dousing my hair with it, and it gave it real texture. It's multi-purpose. You joined Instagram in late 2019 to launch L'Eau-La-Vie, then had to delay its reveal because of COVID-19. Nearly 6 years in, are you just doom-scrolling like the rest of us? I've been trying not to doom-scroll. I try to stay away from the noise as much as possible. Thankfully, my algorithm is animals, architecture, hair, and spiritual affirmations, so it's not that doomy. You and Selena Gomez hosted a Galentine's Day celebration in February where you both launched new products, and your friend Courtney Cox is a beauty entrepreneur too. What tips have you learned from them? Selena helps me lean into social media. She's so effortless when it comes to that. And she's just an angel who I love to spend time with. What haven't I learned from Courtney? We usually talk interior design. It kind of bores people to tears when we get into a room together, but it's what we love. It's our love language. After a long day at work, what do you do to reset? Nothing. I come home, I'm with my dogs. I'll put on music. Right now, she's listening to everything from Benson Boone and Death Cab for Cutie to Radiohead and Alex Warren. I'll talk to some friends on the phone, like people used to do. I like to just zone out to a great documentary, find something that's going to be light on my heart and make me laugh, maybe have friends over for dinner. So what brings you joy these days? I try to focus on the beautiful things that are happening in life and where I can contribute. There are certain things that are out of our control and out of our power, which is quite frustrating. So try not to dwell where you are handcuffed and can't do anything. I love my work, I love my dogs, I love my friends, and I'm excited about creating new things. This has been How Jen Chills Out from People. Word of the week, fascia. This tissue is everywhere in our bodies, and our mobility depends on it. By Cassie Hurwitz, published August 4th, 2025, from Oprah Daily. If most important body parts were a category on Jeopardy, you'd expect to see answers like the brain, heart, lungs, and bones. But there's another one that a lot of people haven't heard of. It's fascia, a connective tissue that surrounds our muscles, bones, nerves, and organs, including those MPVs above, explains Tina Wang, MD, who sits on the board of the directors of the fascia research study. Fascia was once thought to be a structural network, like internal scaffolding, says Wang, but experts now know that it does far more than cushion and support. It helps our muscles move smoothly against each other. When the fascia is healthy, it's stretchy and pliable like a rubber band. But it can become dry and tight from lack of movement, bad posture, inflammation, or chronic stress, says board member Fabiana Silva, PT. Over time, that can cause mobility issues, chronic pain, poor circulation, joint damage, and even immune dysfunction. Thankfully, movement can bring the fascia back to life. Regular yoga, dynamic stretching, and resistance training will keep the tissue, and by extension your whole body, lithe and nimble. The researchers also recommend staying hydrated and practicing breath work. The diaphragm is surrounded by fascia, and deep breathing can help relax the tissue, Silva says. For very stiff tissue, you might have success with myofascial release therapy, also known as gentle massage and foam rolling, which can work to loosen rigid fascia over time. But be wary of tools or therapies that claim to be immediate fixes. Caring for this underrated body part takes time. Your best bet? Keep it healthy from the inside out. This has been Word of the Week, Fascia, from Oprah Daily. You are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer broadcaster, Kelly Pyle, and this is the Women's Hour. The truth hiding in women's brains. Sex differences in Alzheimer's could be the key to better understanding and treating this complex disease. By Linnea Floyd from Women's Health Magazine. Two missing words tipped off Heidi Long that her mother might have dementia. Nearly a decade ago in the springtime, Long was expecting a call from her mom. When that never came, she decided to give her mother a ring instead. After 10 minutes of casual conversation about the weather and politics, Long, a dental hygienist who lives in Kauai, Hawaii, knew there was a problem. "My mom always remembered important dates," she says, "but I turned 25 that day, and my mom didn't remember to wish me, her only child, a happy birthday." Before they hung up, Long mentioned that she was going with her friends out with her friends for her birthday. Her mother awkwardly tried to cover up the fact that she'd forgotten the day. Long couldn't let go of the conversation, though, and started recalling other strange behaviors her 49-year-old mom exhibited. On one occasion, a few years earlier, it took her mom 3 trips to leave the house for work because she kept forgetting her purse. Long had thought at the time that her mom just had a lot on her mind. At another point, her mother made her famous twice-baked potatoes recipe, a family favorite, and forgot some essential ingredients for the first time ever. A few months after the birthday incident, on a walk with her mom, Long found herself answering the same question 3 times in a row. "So, what are you going to do tonight?" her mother asked every time they rounded a corner. "I stayed calm," says Long, "but when we got back to the house, I sat my parents down and said, 'We need to talk.'" More than 6 million Americans over the age of 65 have Alzheimer's, a broad term that describes losing so much of your memory, problem solving, and language skills that it interferes with your day-to-day life. Alzheimer's is the most common form of dementia, followed by types such as Lewy body dementia, frontotemporal dementia, vascular dementia, and more. By 2060, new dementia cases are expected to more than double in the U.S., reaching approximately 1 million new diagnoses per year, according to recent research. What Long and her family didn't know at the time was that women are almost twice as likely to develop Alzheimer's, and that you don't need to be a senior citizen to be at risk. Early onset cases can be diagnosed as early as 30, and though they're rare, occurring in only about 5% of people with Alzheimer's, they do happen. Together, these two facts made Long's mom's shocking Alzheimer's diagnosis easier to understand. The female mind. Despite the fact that nearly 2 in 3 Alzheimer's patients are female, only 12% of Alzheimer's research was centered on women as of 2019, leaving the medical community with a dearth of information about the very population hit hardest by the disease. It's a little bizarre that we haven't focused on women first and foremost, says Fanny Elahi, MD, PhD, an associate professor of neurology and neuroscience at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai in New York City. In research, we always focus on studying the highest risk group for every disease. All the epidemiological and demographic data show us that white men are not that group. It's women. It's time we do a 180. For decades, the gender discrepancy in Alzheimer's disease incidence has been explained, at least in part, by the fact that women live longer than men. Data from 2022 shows there's a nearly 6-year gap between the genders' life expectancies, with the average woman living to 80 years old and the average man living to 74.8 years. As you age, your risk of developing the disease increases. About 1 in 3 people over 85 have Alzheimer's, compared with about 1 in 9 people over 65. But now, experts aren't so sure that longevity is the only reason for the different diagnosis rates. Studies have shown that even when looking at a cohort of men and women in the same age range, women are still more likely to be diagnosed with Alzheimer's. Women also respond very differently to the disease than men do. For example, women tend to have more abnormal accumulations of an Alzheimer's-related protein in their brains before reaching the point of cognitive decline. In doctor speak, this is called being more resilient to the disease progression. This could be because women's brains tend to have a larger reserve when it comes to verbal material, like stories, words, things we've heard about, experts say. So it takes longer for them to lose this. Women also tend to maintain more relationships and participate in more social activities. Some research suggests that isolation may increase your risk for Alzheimer's, while staying social may boost resilience. The more connections you have to your memories, the easier it is to retrieve those memories, Dr. Elahi says. What's more, men appear to have a more linear relationship with Alzheimer's compared to women, slowly losing memory and verbal abilities as the disease progresses, says Sarah Banks, PhD, a neuropsychologist at UC San Diego Health and director of neuropsychology at the multidisciplinary UC San Diego Health Center for Brain Health and Memory Disorders. With women, it's more like falling off a cliff, she says. Women do okay until a certain amount of pathology has built up, and then there's a more rapid decline after that. Long saw this firsthand. Her mother's health hit this cliff and went downhill very quickly after being diagnosed, suggesting she had been struggling with the disease for a long time before her family took notice. Within 2 years, she had problems communicating effectively. Experts are still working to figure out what exactly pushes women off this edge, and understanding the unique way the disease operates in women's brains could go a long way toward helping scientists and doctors unlock answers to some big questions about the disease itself. I see women's brain health as a window into what might be really important to focus on so we can get effective treatments for Alzheimer's disease, says Banks. A primer on plaque. In 1901, a German psychiatrist named Alois Alzheimer met a woman at a Frankfurt psychiatric hospital who fascinated him. She was middle-aged, like Long's mother, but had severe memory loss, confusion, and aggression. He followed the progression of her illness until she passed away 5 years later. After her death, Alzheimer examined her brain and found two abnormalities that remain the key markers associated with the degenerative brain disease that is named after him: protein deposits and tangled nerve fibers. Today, doctors know the protein deposits Dr. Alzheimer found in his patient were a toxic beta amyloid, a protein that clumps together to form plaques between nerve cells. Some amyloid proteins can be beneficial in bolstering your immune system to help fight disease, but too much buildup can disrupt your brain's ability to function and eventually lead to Alzheimer's. Women tend to produce more amyloid plaques than men, which experts think may be an evolutionary advantage that developed to promote stronger immune systems to protect their babies. But as women age, that amyloid puts them in danger. Some existing Alzheimer's medications and new ones in development aim to clear beta amyloid plaque from the brain. Those tangled nerve fibers Dr. Alzheimer found are now known to be a result of accumulations in cells of a protein called tau. In people with Alzheimer's, chemical changes in this protein cause it to behave abnormally, increasing the amount of tau and forming tangled structures. These tangles are a strong marker of diseased cells, says Dr. Elahi. When tau is damaged, unnecessary or old, it is chemically tagged for recycling in the cell. Interestingly, women have a higher concentration of an enzyme that removes these essential tags, meaning the cell doesn't get this important message to recycle the tau, and the protein buildups, clumps, and twists together. This bigger enzyme concentration is probably due to the fact that the gene coding for the enzyme is found on the X chromosome. Researchers wonder if having a Y chromosome might protect men from Alzheimer's, while having two X's might have the opposite effect for women. Together, the cellular changes and the development of bad proteins between neurons cause interruptions in the communication between brain cells, which then degenerate and die. Think of it as a three-step process, says Banks. The cells get disrupted, which leads to a breakdown in the functioning and size of the brain, which results in changes in thinking and behavior. Hormones rule all. Scientists know that estrogen affects almost every single cell in a woman's brain, but they have only recently begun exploring the myriad impacts this has on our health and longevity. Historically, the medical world has not looked at hormones in relation to Alzheimer's risks, says Banks, but it should. We know there are estrogen receptors in the brain, that estrogen is a protective hormone, and that women lose estrogen, along with cognitive functioning, during menopause, she explains. So it stands to reason that hormones could impact women's brain health and Alzheimer's risk. What reproductive changes are telling us about later risk for Alzheimer's disease is the focus of a lot of research going on now, says Jill M. Goldstein, PhD, MPH, a professor of psychiatry and medicine at Harvard Medical School, an executive director of the Innovation Center on Sex Differences in Medicine at Massachusetts General Hospital. Alzheimer's actually began to develop in the brain up to 15 years before signs appear. So ideally, studies should examine the entire spectrum of hormonal fluctuations in a woman's body, as well as psychological and social changes. We need to map perimenopause to 2 decades after menopause, says Dr. Elahi. That's where the risk is building up. There's even some evidence that testosterone could help safeguard men's brains and might potentially help women too. In fact, Banks' research found that higher testosterone levels in women could be protective for brain health. In one study, women with lower testosterone levels who had the APOE4 gene variant, a gene tied to increased Alzheimer's risk, had worse global cognition, processing speed, and verbal memory than others in the study. It may be that low testosterone could one day be considered a modifiable risk factor for Alzheimer's in women, but more studies are needed. Another key element in cognitive decline is stress. Because it impacts some of the brain regions and physiology, such as hormonal and immune factors, that regulate memory and memory function, per Goldstein. It also results in higher levels of the hormone cortisol, which isn't great for brain health. But men and women have different biological, psychological, and social stress experiences. Women reported feeling more stressed than men in 2023, and they tend to be the caregivers for children, partners, and parents. Not to mention the fact that women represent more than 60% of Alzheimer's and dementia caregivers. What's more, researchers found that stress increases the proteins associated with Alzheimer's risk in female mice's brains, but not in males. Scientists need to see what shakes out in humans, but these preliminary findings seem to follow what we already know about the effect of stress. Stress responses differ by sex and can impact the aging brain when it is chronic. Next steps for science. Thankfully, there's been a slow but steady surge in interest and funding for Alzheimer's disease in women over the past few years. In 2016, the National Institutes of Health announced that it expected applicants for funding to factor sex into their research. In 2022, the Women's Alzheimer's Movement Prevention Center at Cleveland Clinic became the nation's first and only Alzheimer's Disease Prevention Center for Women, funding research into questions surrounding the impact of sex hormones, the gut microbiome's role in disease progression, and why women build up more tau tangles than men. Dr. Elahi, for her part, is passionate about the research she's doing on molecules that regulate women's vascular systems, hoping that her findings could lead to new treatments to prevent declining brain function. Meanwhile, Banks is studying the relationship between hormones and inflammation in the brain by measuring levels of cerebrospinal fluid, which surrounds the brain and spinal cord, to learn how these variables may affect women's risk for the disease. When a factor such as sex is a big risk factor, if you don't go after studying it, you are turning away from one of the biggest clues of vulnerability, says Dr. Elahi. Solving the mystery behind women's risk for all diversities also helps men, because we're going to be able to better understand the fundamental principles of it. 2 years ago, the Biden administration created the White House Initiative on Women's Health Research to improve the prevention, diagnosis, and treatment of conditions that affect women disproportionately. This initiative included nearly $1 billion in research funding, including money for studying Alzheimer's in women, but its future is unclear. Its website is now archived and no longer being updated. While more data is certainly a boon for all, experts say they don't expect a better understanding of women's brains to completely unlock the mysteries of this complex disease. And with no single cause, we can't expect a single treatment to work. For now, as doctors ask for more research dollars, loved ones are left dealing with a devastating disease that comes with very few answers. Back in Virginia Beach, where Long was living at the time, her family began researching her mother's illness and found the Brain Donor Project, a nonprofit that ensures that brain tissue donated by people who die from Alzheimer's becomes part of national and international neuroscience research efforts. When she passed, Long's mother was signed up to donate her brain. "We wanted to do whatever we could to make sure another family wouldn't go through what we did," says Long, who adds that the brain donation postmortem report found that her mother had Lewy body disease, another dementia-related progressive brain illness, in addition to Alzheimer's. "My mom worked in a nursing home. I think she knew something was wrong for a while, but didn't tell anyone. I think she also would have wanted to help cure this disease in any way she could. And she is." Prevention practices. Here's what doctors and experts routinely recommend to reduce your risk. 1, find a workout you love. Physical exercise is the low-hanging fruit of prevention, says Banks. It's also the most robust, so it's important in terms of staving off cognitive decline. It's powerful at rebuilding your brain, too. Physical activity can increase nerve growth and neurogenesis, adds Goldstein. 2. Take care of your heart. High cholesterol and hypertension can increase your risk of dementia, but are also controllable. What's good for the heart is good for the brain, and that may be especially important for women, says Banks. 3. Get quality sleep. Find ways to improve your time in bed. It's one of the best things you can do to promote healthy brain function as you age. 4. Stay social. Regardless of age or sex, loneliness can increase your risk of dementia, research shows. Taking steps to avoid isolation is socially and physically beneficial. 5. Check your family tree. Having a first-degree relative with Alzheimer's slightly increases your risk, and having more than one may signal an even greater risk. If you do have risk factors in your family, develop some lifestyle habits to maintain good memory function, says Goldstein. Focus on a healthy diet, exercise, sleep, and activities that keep your mind active. You've been listening to The Truth Hiding in Women's Brains from Women's Health Magazine. This one-minute test can predict your longevity. Researchers tracked thousands of adults over more than a decade and found a surprising link between floor mobility and mortality. By Sophia Lodato, published July 30th, 2025, from Oprah Daily. In the wise words of Radiohead, we all should sit down, stand up more often. More specifically, imagine sitting on the floor and then standing back up, but without using your hands or knees to brace yourself. It is surprisingly trickier than you might think, and a recent study revealed that this sitting rising test, SRT, can actually indicate how much longer you'll live. The study was led by Brazilian sports medicine doctor Claudio Gil Araujo, MD, PhD, who created the SRT in the 90s. He and his team initially published a paper in 2012 that followed more than 2,000 older adults over a 6-year period. They found that those with low scores on the SRT were 5 to 6 times more likely to die within the next decade compared to those who scored an 8 or above. The SRT is scored through 10, with 10 being the best. We'll explain more below. In the new follow-up, Araujo and team studied even more people, about 4,200, over longer time frames, more than 20 years, to see what else the SRT could help measure. Spoiler, they found that your SRT scores can predict premature natural and cardiovascular related deaths, as opposed to the initial study, which predicted mortality in general. How can such a simple test reveal so much? Essentially, the SRT, as opposed to conventional aerobic fitness tests, swimming, running, cycling, gives you a strong and pretty holistic idea of your musculoskeletal fitness, muscle strength, flexibility, balance, coordination, and body composition. All of these are highly important metrics for maintaining health as we grow older. Case in point, the leading cause of injury-related death in people over 65 is falling. The test is about as simple as it sounds. While standing, cross your legs and lower yourself to sit on the floor, a la crisscross applesauce style. But do not use your hands or anything else to brace yourself. Then, with your legs still crossed and still not bracing yourself or seeking outside support, stand back up. To score yourself, begin with 10 points and deduct a full point every time you brace yourself. Deduct additional half points if you're particularly wobbly or unbalanced. For best results and ease, you should be barefoot and wearing comfortable clothing. And if you have difficulty with balance, get someone to spot you. If you're struggling with SRT, don't panic. A low score by itself does not mean you're unhealthy, especially if you're regularly exercising. Regardless of age, things like genetics, arthritis, and body type can affect how well you perform on the SRT. The main reason the SRT is so useful is that it's a simple, easily accessible assessment tool for your health and longevity. If your scores are very low and you're not doing much to keep active otherwise, then it may indicate it's time for you to change your lifestyle a bit. Of course, warming up with other flexibility and strength exercises, especially those targeting the core and legs, can improve your score over time. Just be sure to talk to your doctor first, especially if you have joint issues. And overall, remember that a healthy, balanced lifestyle matters much more than the results of a single test. You've been listening to This 1 Minute Test Can Predict Your Longevity from Oprah Daily. That's a wrap on today's Women's Hour. I'm Kelly Pyle, your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster. I hope you enjoyed the stories today and make plans to join us again next week for another collection of articles from women's magazines. Don't forget, you can take Sun Sounds with you. You can stream as well as access shows on demand on our new Sun Sounds of Arizona apps for both Apple and Android. Have a great day and be sure to stay tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona.